Welcome to another episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies. Neil Rosen here, and we're going to be talking about The Nice Guys, the new Russell Crowe, Ryan Gosling film. We're going to be talking about Neighbors 2 with Rose Byrne and Seth Rogen and Zac Efron.
Is that Neighbors 2 Electric Boogaloo?
No, it's just Neighbors 2.
Neighbors
2,
okay.
Song of Lahore, The Witch, and Embrace of the Serpent, joined, as always, by Bill Brigoli.
There's a girl in here.
Bill McCuddy.
I'm just as uncomfortable as you are.
And from Collider, returning to us on the podcast, is Perry Nemiroff. Hi, Perry.
I am perfectly fine right now.
Yes, a female voice on the show, thank goodness. Okay, let's start talking about The Nice Guys. Okay, it takes place in the late 1970s, and it was written and directed by Shane Black, who wrote all those Lethal Weapon movies. And this is another buddy kind of comedy, but this is an action comedy crime thriller. As I said, 70s L.A., Russell Crowe's a tough guy private eye. Ryan Gosling is another detective who's working on the same case, which involves the alleged suicide of a porn star. Initially, they're adversaries. Russell Crowe kind of beats the crap out of Ryan Gosling, but they quickly team up and uncover that there's a larger conspiracy at work, and they become pals. Mm. Plot seems sort of secondary to the buddy film chemistry. I thought that the comedy stuff worked for a while, but then the plot is completely uninteresting to me and uninvolving.
It's a Scooby-Doo episode. That's basically what it is. I was waiting for the mystery van to pull in. I mean, this thing is a mess. I agree with you when
the
it first starts
van's
out.
The mystery van's in the sequel, you know?
Well, right. Sequel? Don't scare me. Listen, I agree that there are some laugh-out-loud jokes in the beginning of this movie, like really funny. Shane Black knows what he's doing in Lethal Weapon movies, and I was hoping this would be just as good as, you know, that kind of chemistry. But that's lightning in a bottle once. This has not happened again. Ryan Gosling, I think, is hilarious. I think every time he's funny, I'll show up, and I showed up for this. But ultimately, I'm sorry I did.
I like the daughter the best.
Yeah, Reese Witherspoon's mini-me.
Yeah, she looks anytime like you can get a young girl talking dirty, I'm there for it.
But that's the worst parenting like in the world. Ryan Gosling plays the girl's father, and he's taking her on these, like, crime spree things where, like, her life is in total jeopardy.
She's watching pornos at this, like, coke-infused
Yeah, but they don't even play
party.
That for laughs. It's like, oh, come along. And I'm like, what are you kidding? I mean, these bullets flying, and they bring the daughter along?
No, she hid in the trunk, you forget.
Hey, anyway, oh, okay, like, then that's okay, then. Perry?
I can't believe you guys are being so hard on this. I had so much fun with this movie. I don't think it's perfect, and I definitely agree with the fact that the mystery is kind of blah and gets a little confusing and pointless towards the end, but I really enjoyed their chemistry. I could have watched a whole nother hour of the two of them, like, bopping around together, picking on their enemies.
Yeah, I wish I felt that way. I wanted to. Listen, this thing gets started, and it's got a great vibe. A porn actress crashes her car through somebody's window, and a little kid walks out, and this porn actress is strewn across the hood of her car or whatever, and she's her dying words. I mean, it starts out funny, and it sure looks like the 70s. They got all the right cars, including Gosling.
You know, they shot a lot of them in Atlanta, actually.
Is that
true? Really?
Yeah.
Which, well, sadly still looks like the 70s.
I don't know. I thought there was an over-reliance on action scenes.
I thought
the
action scenes were so well done,
they
though.
Bored.
They each had, like, a really individual flair to it where it didn't feel like the same thing over and over.
It seemed like they were these obligatory action scenes that were put in the movie that didn't advance the story. They bored me. I thought Crowe and Gosling had good chemistry, and there were moments when I was, like, enjoying their dynamic together. But after a while, and I agree with McCuddy, I mean, it's just kind of like I didn't really care what was going on.
Crowe lives on top of the Comedy Store on Sunset Strip for no reason at all. Like, absolutely, it's
yeah,
not.
Yeah, did they have, like, a tie-in? They kept showing the Comedy Store.
He lived upstairs. That's where he lived.
And, but they showed the marquee where it said Robert Klein.
That could have been so cool with comics dropping in and giving him jokes that he uses later in the movie. Think about how cool that could have been.
I went there for the first time the other week, and I felt super cool that I knew what that was when I went to the movie. I was supposed to go see a friend, and I missed him, but I hung out there for a while, and
any
I walked
famous
around.
Comics that, any comics that you,
I looked at the wall, and I saw all the names. I will go back and actually see a performance.
Bill McCuddy's played there, and in fact, Mitzi Shore watched I Killed, even if I have to say this myself. I had a great set. I walked up to her. She never looked up. I go, "What'd you think, Mitzi?" She goes, "You don't live here." I was living in New York at the time, or actually Washington on the East Coast. She goes, "You don't live here." Never looked at me. Boom. That was it. That was my whole Comedy Store experience.
Wow.
So he lives on top of that. There are so many other peripheral. There's a scene where they're driving around, and one of them falls asleep, and Hannibal Buress, playing a giant bee or an ant or something, starts talking to him.
That's
hallucination.
Just, yeah, it's
well,
just
that was actually probably one of the weakest scenes in the entire film.
I don't know.
Did, I wish did, it, what, Bill, did you enjoy the thing, Bergoglio?
It went on too long for me. I think I like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Shane Black's previous.
Yeah, that was better.
Ditto. I loved that. There's an underrated movie that's available to rent, and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is great. You know what's cool about Shane? You know the Shane Black story. First guy to sell a screenplay for like a spec one for like $1 million. I think it was The Last Boy Scout. He's the guy, remember this about 20 years ago, that was living in the Hollywood Hills with a bunch of other writers? And they were just cranking screenplays out. They would come home and talk to each other and spitball ideas back and forth. And it was his house. It was the something pad, the crash pad or something. Yeah. And it was written about in Vanity Fair and a bunch of places. And he was the breakout guy. They all became, it was sort of like Entourage. He was the big guy that broke out. And the rest of them sort of hung around and like to say they lived with him at that time. Apropos of nothing, I've been following him in his career because I think he's an interesting writer, and he's only directed a few times. This just felt as bloated as Russell Crowe.
You know, I mean, it's not a terrible movie. I mean, it has moments, but, you know, I think it, you know, and again, I say this every week, this podcast is an after show to a television show that we do in New York on New York One and nationally on Time Warner Cable called Talking Pictures. And
this is our afterthought.
And that show predominantly looks at movies that are available on demand, although we do some theatrical releases. We do like one a week, and we did this particular movie. But I think if you're a fan of Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling, that I don't think this is worth the full price at the box office. I think that, you know, as a on-demand renter for, you know, $4.99 when it comes on demand in like 4 or 5 months, or, you know, when it comes onto HBO, yeah, sure, it's worth a look. How do you think this movie will do? You think this movie will do well?
Just so-so. People will come out to see Ryan Gosling. I can think of a certain demographic that will run out to the theaters to see anything that Ryan Gosling's in, but that's about it. I don't think it's going to do well there.
What's it opening against, though?
The Angry Birds movie.
Angry Birds and Neighbors 2?
Neighbors 2.
That's what this is.
We're going to talk about Neighbors 2 in a minute. But Gosling, I think Gosling has, you know, both of them, I think, are skilled. I mean, you wouldn't think so, but I think both of them, Crowe and Gosling, are skilled to comedy.
Ryan Gosling is so funny, and I really didn't expect that at all, but he was nailing his.
Well, he's so
this.
Funny in that, and I can't think of the name of the movie. It's with Steve Carell.
Crazy Stupid Love.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I forgot about that movie. Yeah.
Crazy Stupid Love.
Crazy Stupid Love. Thank you, Bill McCovey.
For the third time.
Yes. Yeah. And, he's very, very funny in that. And
they've been doing a lot of shtick. You know, they went on Colbert. They've gone on.
Yeah, I saw that. That didn't really work.
They did a lot of Q&A at stuff, and they've been pretending to snipe with each other. And it's pretty funny, actually.
Yeah, they're touring the world, as they said, on Colbert, promoting this particular movie. So they're spending a lot of time together.
Well, they probably want a sequel so they can introduce the van.
I would love to. I would love that this had been a good enough movie to have a sequel.
Do you think this movie will get a sequel? I mean, do you think that this movie will make enough money where they will actually say, let's make another? Because you see, they become sort of partners in this movie, so the door is open to make many multiple movies. But do you think this movie, Bergoglio, will make enough money?
No,
to,
I think they might pair them in another movie, maybe as different characters. That could happen.
Do you think this movie? Do you think we're going to see a Nice Guys 2?
I would like to see a Nice Guys 2. I don't think the box office is going to make that happen, though.
No.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so either. Well, I don't know. You know, Crowe, before we move on, has he done many comedies? I mean, you know, this is like an action comedy, but I'm trying to think of his roles. I mean, that Wine movie, which was terrible, was not really.
Oh, yeah.
It really wasn't
that.
A comedy.
Yeah, my favorite year.
Yeah, that.
My no, something no. Year,
something,
my
the year
my,
of something, and it was a wine word or something.
Year
my
or
vintage
something.
Year or something like that, yeah.
Can you think of Russell Crowe being funny in anything?
No.
Those gladiator sequences were a riot. I was howling with laughter with Joaquin Phoenix. No, I don't think so. But, you know, he's funny on the talk shows. I mean.
He is. I think Gosling is the. I mean, there's sort of. A lot of people are comparing them to Laurel and Hardy. And I think there's sort of. And certainly Russell has gotten to nearly the size. He's huge in this thing. I mean, but I think the real comedian, as we've been saying, is Ryan Gosling. I think his timing is impeccable. I think he throws things away and looks like he's going to say something straight and it comes out funny. And I just think he's the find here.
So Kim Basinger's in the movie.
Yeah, but boy, there's the Cuisinart edition after like the 3/4 point. Let's see. We need Kim Basinger in here all of a sudden and boom, she's in the movie.
Right. How do you think she looked? She hasn't been in a movie in ages.
I thought she looked awesome, but I can't tell if people have had work.
I don't know.
Yeah, look good. Yeah. Still like the little girl.
Perry.
I'm surprised no one reviews movies based on that. You know, some sort of rating scale.
Mr. Skin.
I was just thinking of that on Howard Stern. There's a whole different rating scale.
It's a twist on that then.
All right, so we were talking about whether the nice guys would have a sequel. Well, here's a movie that did get a sequel that I never thought would get a sequel, and that is Neighbors 2. If you remember Neighbors 1, Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne are a married couple, and a frat house moves in next door, led by Zac Efron. And, you know, in this particular one, it's 4 years later, and the a sorority house is now moving next door.
Who'd have thought?
And they actually, you know, even though it's a stretch that that happens, I don't think, Rigoli, that it was that. They kind of integrated it pretty well, why that sorority
right.
house.
And they worked in Zac Efron into that plot. And
well, we talked about Comic Finds, and you guys have seen it. Perry and I haven't, so I want you to sort of talk us into it or out of it. But the comic find, the way Ryan Gosling is in some of the movies we were talking about earlier, I really think Zac Efron in the first Neighbors was a total surprise, really funny.
Zac Efron displayed that he had comedy chops in the first Neighbors movie, and I was like, oh my God, I can't, like, who would have imagined that this guy would have been funny, but...
Does he just have a cameo in this
one? No, he's actually part of the plot. He moves in and out of this, he inures himself into the seniority house. He gets himself in there.
He's not at Abercrombie and Fitch anymore?
No, he's actually in retail, and he's lost his job to younger guys. His character, and he's put off by that. Also, his roommates from the frat house have become engaged, two of them.
Yes, they become engaged to each other.
Ah.
Yes. So, you see, Zac Efron is feeling very lonely, and he goes to this...
So Dave Franco is gay in this?
Yeah. Yes. And he goes...
Gee, a Franco that's gay. What are the odds?
And he goes to this... He feels so lonely and dejected in his life that he goes back to this empty frat house, which, you know, reminds him, this is the beginning of the movie, of these good times that he used to have, you know, when his life was actually, you know, fun.
Uh-huh.
And concurrently, Chloe Grace Moretz does not like the sororities that she's being asked to pledge for, so she starts her own sorority, runs into Zac Efron, you know, and Zac Efron is like, I know how to run. I ran a fraternity. Let me run your sorority.
Didn't Jonah Hill do that in a movie where he started his own sorority or fraternity? They built the school. He was going to school, and his parents were paying for it, and he didn't.
Oh yeah,
yeah. That was
he's getting into college.
He didn't build a fake. Yes, he built a fake whole school.
Oh yeah, okay.
God, accepted.
Accepted yeah. With Louis right, with Louis Black.
I can't believe you referenced Accepted. Well, what is that from? Like. Early 2000s.
My daughter loved
like no
that movie.
That.
My daughter watched that movie when she was like a...
You're right. It was a school. I'm sorry. I thought that was...
I watched it
over and over and over and over again.
And Justin Long.
Yeah. And Lewis,
I haven't thought about
and
that
Lewis
movie
Black.
Forever.
Lewis
yeah.
Black.
Yeah. Huh.
So the deal is this, is that when the movie opens, Rogan and Byrne, she gets pregnant again.
They've sold their house.
They sold the house, but the house is in escrow. And they explain to you what that means, which means that for 30 days until they close, the people that bought your house have an opportunity at any time, unannounced,
right,
to come in and inspect the house. So, of course, concurrently while this is going on, the sorority moves in next door.
That's funny.
And
that's comedy.
Seth Rogen wants them out of there, so calls up Chloe Moretz's parents, and they get really pissed off that the parents were called. So it's on, and so basically, like the first one, they're basically doing all these things. And there's more airbag jokes, like in the first one.
What and about breast milk jokes? Because that was the funniest scene in the first
there
movie.
There are actually dildo jokes. And,
yes, there's a big dildo joke.
Well, I'm not surprised. Yeah. How is Chloe Moretz in this? Because she is very.
I like her.
I think she can
She's good, but nothing else.
They
don't give her enough to do in this. Huh. They make her character pretty flat, and all her character is interested in is starting her own sorority, and that's it. There's nothing quirky or strange about her. She doesn't wear any purple wigs. They seem a little afraid of letting the female characters, other than Rose Byrne, the female characters express any kind Rose of sexuality Byrne,
another
or anything
funny,
like that.
Funnier,
she's great.
Funny
she's
in
funny.
Spy, funny in...
Yeah,
she,
they give her...
Oh, I don't...
Wait,
I don't.
Chloe played straight in Youth, and I thought she was pretty good, but she was basically playing
well,
herself.
Yeah,
you
that
agree,
one doesn't
Neil?
Really
the
count.
The core group of the story.
We're having our own conversation over here.
Yeah, really.
So here's what will happen.
And
we'll do it
Silveria.
In two tracks, and we'll be like the DVD okay. bonus extra track, and they'll be talking on the other track. All right.
The three core sorority sisters were talking about, one of them in particular, I forgot. I don't know her name. Let's say that.
Well, I'm glad we went back to this conversation.
One. She was talking about sex quite a bit, you know. But it was more about weed than sex.
Yes.
It was more about the movie really centers around weed. That is
There's a car wash that's pretty sexy and looks funny in the trailer.
In the trailer.
Where Seth's going, this isn't helping. This is making them sexier.
Right. The reason that Chloe wants to start a sorority house is because they won't let her light up a joint in one of the houses that she's trying to interview for. Yeah. So that it's really about weed. Listen, here's the thing. It was directed by Nicholas Stoller, who did the first one. And I liked the first one quite a bit. And I did not expect much of anything from Neighbors 2. And I would say that although not as funny as Neighbors 1, I'd say if you like the first one, there is enough here to warrant going to see it. It did make me laugh.
Serviceable is the word I'd use.
Serviceable is a good word. I think that it cops out at the end. I won't give the ending away, but there's a real move that's made by Rose Byrne and Seth Rogen at the end that betrays the core of the movie.
Well, not quite. They still have roots in the old house.
Well, I don't know. I would say if you like Neighbors 1, Neighbors 2.
If you're listening to this now, Perry and I are as lost as you are.
Yes, Perry and
we'll
I
all go see it.
I actually
movie.
Think I might have just guessed the ending of the
okay.
movie.
Right. Yeah, thanks.
I don't think you will.
Spoiler McSpoiler.
Tell me afterwards.
Don't worry.
Okay.
All right, Bill. So as I said, we talk about movies that are on demand. Perry, you suggested a movie on the television show today, which I'd like to talk about on the podcast called The Witch.
I love The Witch.
Talk to us about The Witch.
The Witch is definitely going to be on my best horror movie of the year list. I don't know about best movie. It's right there. It's up there with Green Room, which is actually also an A24 movie. So A24 is killing it in horror this year.
A24 is a distributor. It's a small distributor like the Weinstein Company. It's smaller than that, but just
getting bigger by the day, though. Keep an eye out for them.
Is.
But the movie is from director Robert Eggers, and it's actually his first feature film, which is pretty damn incredible. And it takes place in 1630 in New England. It's about a family who gets booted from their plantation, and they have to kind of build a life for their own, and they just choose a plot of land that's right next to a super creepy forest.
And a nasty goat.
Yeah. Black Phillip is the breakout of this movie. Keep an eye out for him. I do kind of want a plush toy of Black Phillip, though. I'm not going to lie.
So it's racially balanced because they have a black goat. You think in 1630s, where are we going to get any kind of...
So there's creepy things going on in this forest, and they blame it on the eldest daughter, and they say Thomason. That she's Pratt. Yeah. It's like a killer name.
Yeah.
I want to have a kid and name her Thomason.
Yeah.
Thomason.
I talked to the actress. We can get that out later, but she's no longer the prepubescent girl in the movie.
She's great.
She's the most delightful people make
horror movies.
Yeah, she's a lovely girl. And
if you're paying attention at home, that's the second creepy reference Bill has made to young women.
And there'll be more, I promise you. Actually, I got to speak to her. She had just done a Q&A. With an audience and came out and I grabbed her beside the screening room and we chatted a bit. And
third creepy reference.
I also mentioned. All right. And there'll be more. First, I talked to her.
We could turn this into a drinking game.
That's right. Every time Bill makes a creepy reference, you'll be blotto by the end of this. One thing she said is that this is not a message movie.
There's nothing that we went into this like wanting to impart. We just wanted to be like, this is a genuine part of history, and this is the way that the witch existed for the people there. Like, witches were real, and this is, you know, what a witch was. And you guys, like, as an ancestral group, like, used to be very, very afraid of this.
Not only were witches real to these people, but the language they use and the these and the thous and the way they speak and constantly quote the Bible was apparently written from or taken from the vernacular of the time. It seems extremely authentic.
The director went to great lengths. I was watching an interview with him saying that he went to great lengths to make everything look authentic to the period, and that he did research and he saw that, you know, what we looked at as fairy tales, that they really thought that witches existed with with broomsticks and the big hats and the whole thing like that. And he said he wanted to immerse you in this world to, you know, you're going to kind of feel like the way these people feel and kind of believe that these people are believing that this is all, you know, real.
It's that being said, though, I don't think anyone should go into this expecting a traditional horror movie. Like, no. I've heard a little bit of backlash because people think, oh, a witch story, I'm going to get some jump scares. That's not what this is at all. He weaves that history into the story in a really interesting way.
It's a slow burn.
It's definitely not just about the witch popping up out of the woods and shouting boo and scaring you. It's about how she tears this family apart and destroys their lives.
Yeah, the family starts to get paranoid and starts to sort of turn on each other, and that to me is the most interesting thing.
Yeah,
and
it's different kind
of
horror.
Name. What is
Anya
her name?
Anya Taylor-Joy is her name.
I think she's going to be.
Fantastic.
I don't know. She's a huge star.
I checked her
in
IMDb.
All the kids.
She's got like five more movies.
Is that true?
Not at all surprised.
And was this like her first thing?
No, actually, like her second or third.
It was her first big thing though. That got a lot of press. But all the kids in this movie, I forget his name now, and it bothers me. But the young boy who plays her brother. He is so good in this movie, too. Yeah.
She was telling me that actually during some of the screenings, because they had the A24 had them doing all these Q&As, and when they were at Sundance and they showed the film, some woman got all freaked out and cornered Anya Taylor-Joy and said, "Why were you abusing this young boy in the movie?" And she said, "Look, he was not being abused. The director was coaching him how to react. You can't hear the director, but in the background he was telling them, now make a big scary face. Now do this, now do that." The kid was not scared at all. And I've got one more bite of Anya, and she was saying that apropos to all that, this shoot was not as intense for her as it may look to us, the audience.
I mean, the scenes were intense, but like I can never remember walking around set not like smiling unless I was like, I'd just done a really emotional scene, and I was like, "No one be kind to me, please. Like, I can't handle it. I need a moment alone." It felt like, to me, it felt like summer camp or something like that.
Hold it, I didn't notice this in the first
clip.
This
English.
Where is she from?
You've
been stalking her, Bill. Where was
all
she
right,
born?
I'm now the expert. She was born in America, but her father is Spanish, and her mother is Scottish, and she grew up for a while in England. So she's been all over.
I heard
got that Madonna-itis.
In the first bite, the first sound bite, she sounded actually like Chloe
Grant. Oh, God.
And now she's got this, she's got this kind of English lilt.
Sorry.
Bill can't shut her off.
I can't.
That's right. So I would recommend this movie.
It's your non-traditional
horror
film. Perry says
it's
in her top 10, which
At this point, it's still in my top 10 of 2016. It might dip off by the end of the year because I prefer Green Room to this because that's more my speed, but this is still a fantastic film.
I got a big kick out of it because I grew up in New England and we were always being dragged as school kids to Plymouth Plantation.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Well, that was the field trip you had to go on. And
really?
To see, and they have people dressed up. It's odd. They have people dressed up speaking like they do in this
like
movie.
Like Colonial Williamsburg.
Yeah, exactly. Reenactor types.
And, do they come up to you like they're like, would you like to, you know, come in the cornfield and pick some corn with us?
It's like that Chuck.
Yeah, that's a really bad imitation. Really bad.
Remember the movie Choke? That took place at Chuck Palahniuk movie?
No.
About a sex addict who worked part-time.
Yeah, sure.
It's kind of like that.
Fourth creepy reference from Bill.
I'm going to keep him coming.
Did you ever go to a reenactment as a kid, Perry or Bill? Reenactment? Did your parents take you to
the Amish? Well, when my parents got divorced, the judge asked me to say what had really happened that night. I have not been to anything.
I went to a Civil War reenactment.
Oh, those guys are crazy.
With the Cub Scouts when I was like 11 years old. They took us to Connecticut. And all of a sudden, there's hundreds of people with rifles firing blanks and, you know, like the South.
They're really into that.
And the North and, you know, with Union uniforms what was the South? The Union was the South. What was the North?
Rebels and the
Grays and the Blues. Yeah, but it wasn't like a couple of dozen people. I mean,
I just saw Free State of Colorado.
Hundreds of people.
I should know what they're called.
There's hundreds of people and
The Confederates.
Thank you so much. Look at that. What do we have for Bill? Yeah. It's a new car. That's right, Bill.
It's the Buick LeSabre.
It's from Lincoln Mercury. It's the Montego. Yeah. Yeah, so
you can tell we'd never edit this show, by the way.
That's right.
Believe me.
That's right. But anyway, it was very impressionable as a young kid watching Like, these people running up hills, and they would fake, like, stabbing, you know, like, fake blood, because they were bayonets on the rifles and stuff. I'm just sitting there going, what in the world is this?
To a Jewish guy out of New York, this is
gotta be
really
weird. I want to go see one of these.
Yes, I think they still have them. Now they have these. There used to be a guy that worked at New York One. I will not say his name. But he used to go to these, not a Renaissance fair, but he used to go to
LARPing.
These.
LARPing. Tell me it's LARPing.
No, it was these paintball things, but they would be dressed as, like, medieval people, you know, and they would be
just like the medieval times when they had paintball, sure.
And it was just
it was very authentic.
He would come back and tell us these stories about like he would have like a Viking hat on, and I don't know what. So there's a lot of people into a lot of things, but Perry, you like. You're into you,
what are
you know
into?
About these worlds like with comic. You're into comic books and horror and stuff.
Yeah, I like that stuff.
And you go to Comic Con. I mean, do you ever run across?
I did make one of my short films in grad school was about LARPing though, which is a very
what is LARPing?
A very
LARPing.
Fascinating
is
community.
It sounds weird.
No,
it's another creepy reference.
Is that like My Little Pony?
Bill's counting his own creepy references.
It's live action role playing, so it's you know
sounds
people build these worlds and they dress up and they kind of act out
like in the movie Role Models. Remember that?
Yeah. That is LARPing.
McLovin
yeah.
was in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We made once. I made a film that was about LARPing, and then through the context that it made while making that movie, I used a LARPing camp as just the scene for as the location for my thesis.
So
film.
Is everybody role playing in the same time period? Did
yeah.
They give
they,
you like
they make yeah. rules and stories.
So it's
and
like
they,
today we're going to do like the 17th century, and we're all.
So no one can show up with a phaser and kill
like,
everybody.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it's like I'm. Who are you? I'm Darth Vader. What are you? I'm George Washington. Washington. I mean, it really wouldn't work, you know, unless it's a Back to the Future
no,
kind of DeLorean.
It's a little more fantasy-based than that.
Right.
So before we move on to the next movie, can you give me an example of a LARPing scenario that would be...
Oh, no, because I'm not half as creative as those people are. And that's
well,
the most...
Well, think of role models. They went to the park, remember, and they all met, and they had the chainmail on, and they were like Dungeons & Dragons guys,
yeah.
and they were fighting each other...
But
and
that's the coolest thing is that they make up all this stuff and, like, really detailed rules also. Like, this would never work unless those people were just insanely creative, and they are.
She's way too into this. So
well, there you go.
Can I give a quick shout-out to Love and Friendship while we're talking about people in crazy costumes? This is the Jane Austen thing that Whit Stillman did that's
Whit
just
Stillman
out last
movie.
Week.
Yes, I have to see that.
Nobody's seen it but me. I'm telling you, I'm only bringing it up because she said Whit might be in her top 10. So far, Love and Friendship is in my top 10. Top 10 this year, so I encourage people to
so
go out.
It's the reunion of another
Whit
movie Stillman, that Whit Stillman
Chloe
did.
Sevigny and Kate Beckinsale.
Right,
which
and they all
about.
Did The Last Days of Disco
right.
together quite a number of years ago.
Which
and
is
now,
on demand. We
and now they're
about.
In a Jane Austen period
yeah.
costume thing, you know, and highly recommended, huh?
I loved it. Very
funny?
Funny, very funny.
Is it very Whit Stillman-esque in terms of
a
the...
A little bit, but it never jumps the Jane Austen shark, and it'll I'm giving nothing away. For example, when you first meet somebody, it'll say, they'll freeze the frame, and it'll go, Lord Mountbatten, whatever his name is, and then under, kind of a scallywag. And then, like, so then he's, it goes back to live action,
right.
and someone goes, there's Lord Mountbatten, he's kind of a scallywag. And, like, it's so it's in on its own joke a little
okay,
bit,
cool.
but it's really cleverly done.
And it's good to see Kate Beckinsale, A, in anything, and B, in something other than wearing leather pants, probably.
You know,
okay, that takes
I,
away one of your creepy references.
I will tell you that having interviewed practically every person in a movie that you could think of over the last 30 years, I interviewed Kate Beckinsale once, and it's just breathtaking. Just you know, I never really get into this on the show, but she was one of the most beautiful women I've ever met.
I will echo
in the room.
That to take some of the discomfort of your creepiness away from.
Yeah, no,
just
but
say,
I mean, I never
the last red carpet I did. I can't even remember that. She just glided. She just came down that red carpet and looked like she was from another planet. It was just really remarkable. Perry, you want to jump in here?
Yeah, Perry.
I feel like if you're playing our drinking game right now, you need to chug your drink.
And by the way, wear a gown next time, please.
Yeah?
Yeah, we'll
okay.
be back.
Speaking of good-looking people, let's talk about Embrace of the Serpent.
Well, this is a very, very unusual movie in which there are no good-looking people. That's the joke.
Oh,
Black
no, I
white.
Don't agree. I think that the Amazonian
yeah, well.
Natives are, like, really, like, they're kind of pumped up, you know?
Okay, this is just off the creepy meter, this whole show. This is basically based on some diary writings of two men who went up the Amazon. One was German, the other was American. One did it in the turn of the century, about 1903. The other did it in the 1940s. And both of these guys used the same shaman to go up the Amazon. It's black and white. It looks unbelievable. But it's kind of a strange story. And I got to say, even though it's Oscar nominated, I think that this is kind of a snooze.
I like the cinematography. It takes place in the early 1900s and then like 1940.
Good point. One I made just a second ago.
Yes, as you mentioned.
Neil looks through his notes on this show. I just want to out him about one thing. He's constantly checking to make sure that I haven't made a mistake. And the problem with that is we say something and he's like, oh, yeah, and let me repeat what was just said because I didn't hear it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
All right. I'm calling you out.
All right. So anyway, it's a particular taste. You know what I mean? I think it's the kind of movie that you can't see on demand, that you need to totally be absorbed in the world and see it in a movie theater. And it does go on these tangents. There's this metaphorical stuff with serpents and leopards and, you know, but I will say that it makes some interesting points. I mean, I think that these, you know, especially at the turn of the century, I mean, the white colonists come in to, like, basically destroy the civilization of these Amazonian people.
You'll feel guilty
people.
As a white person watching this movie,
and,
I think.
And, you know, and you watch it and you say to yourself, you know, that not technically but philosophically, the Amazonians are light years ahead of the white colonists in terms of the way they respect the land and their outlook on life. And these other people are just coming in and basically raping the land. They're just cutting the trees down. Then they fast forward 40 years later and it's even worse, you know. And it's lost civilizations and lost cultures. And I think there's points to be made here. Yeah, it's slow moving and dull at certain points, but I kind of liked it. I mean, I think if you want to see something interesting, it's kind of a trippy movie, too. I mean, they're always doing these hallucinogenics at different points in the movie and, you know, to get inner insight into themselves. I don't know, Perry?
It's slow, but I wouldn't call it dull or boring because I think the pacing kind of suits the material and the way it's shot. The coolest thing about this film is that it really enraptures you in that environment. You feel like you're in the Amazon, and I think the black and white cinematography really helps with that. And just the time that you get to spend with these characters and harping on their every word and really trying to understand, you know, what they believe in and how they live their life. I think it needed to be as slow as it was, but that being said, I think between the pacing and just the content of the movie, I probably couldn't recommend it to, like, half the people in my life.
I would say watch the trailer, and based on what we've described, if that looks interesting to you, then yes, you should probably see it.
That's a fair way to break it
down.
You
know, I would say, Bill, to watch the trailer.
I'm sorry, I was just looking through some notes.
And if you like that, yes, I know. I did hear you. I was listening. That was a joke.
What else do we have? What else?
All right, and one
about?
More movie today is Song of Lahore, which is a documentary that I was, you know, I always say that, and Bill quotes this too, is that the mark of a good documentary is to make me interested in something that I really did not think I would have any interest in whatsoever. And here's a movie about these Pakistani musicians who were invited to Lincoln Center to perform with Wynton Marsalis. And, you know, I learned a lot in this movie. I mean, I had no idea that years ago, before Sharia law, that Lahore, which is a city in Pakistan, was a center of musical culture.
You didn't know that?
And that talented musicians whose life was music provided musical soundtracks for local movies there. And then here's a bunch of people who dedicated their life to music. Music is now outlawed in Pakistan, and they want to bring their music to the world. So what they do is they decide they're going to take a different direction, and they're going to do jazz interpretations with sitars and their drums and these instruments. And they do this version of Dave Brubeck's Top Five,
Take Five.
And it's really sound.
A couple of them, or one of them, had seen when they were, had actually gone to see Brubeck when they were a kid.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Take Five played with these Pakistani instruments, and that lilt sounds, you know, familiar and new at the same time. Plus, when they get to New York and they don't feel that they're good enough to play at Lincoln Center, and you're going, oh, they're going to just come, it's going to be, it's not just the, you know, a slam dunk. I you watch their fears and, like, you know, one guy, you know, I'm not really spoiling the movie, one guy gets fired. I mean, you know, it's like he's not good enough.
The first half of this movie wasn't really doing it for me. It shows you all of the individual guys and gives you some background on their personal stories and situations. And while all of them are incredible and, you know, I definitely learned something from it, I wasn't really invested with them until they made the move to New York. And well,
part of their culture was wiped out. Like, that, I thought that was important.
I thought that
was
incredible.
This music was going to go away except for these guys because it's basically been outlawed. And now Wynton hears about them. And yes, when they get here, they're like, they're not really ready for primetime playing yet, is one way to look at it. And they of course, I'm not going to spoil anything, but
they
do a concert.
Don't say whether it comes off successfully or not, but
all of that felt important to learn. It was just in terms of assessing it from a storytelling perspective. All of a sudden, midway through the movie, the narrative just took off for me. And before I knew it, I was really rooting for all of them.
I was interested the whole way through. The first half was like a history lesson for me. And then I think the second half, I'm rooting for these guys. I got involved with these guys, and I'm like, gee, I hope they pull this off. And I also think that, you know, just if you're interested in music, I mean, it just shows you, you know, you go to a concert and you just see people play music. It takes you behind the scenes at a rehearsal process, and you just see that, you know, sometimes the rehearsal might not be as good as what you see on stage, or vice versa, but it shows you a kind of a process, if you're interested in music, how things, live performances are put together. I like the movie very much.
Bill, anyone hot in the movie for you?
No. Wearing no skirts, no.
All right, so next week on the show, we're going to be talking about, what are we talking about next week on the show?
Why are you looking at me?
Because you were in the meeting when we talked about next week's show. We're going to be talking about the Johnny Depp movie, Through the Looking Glass.
Right.
And we're going to also be talking about a new movie.
Krampus.
Which was Perry's critics pick this week on the show, if you watch it.
Don't listen to anyone
about this
but
new
me.
Alec Baldwin film that's coming out.
A fighting movie.
Yeah, about a boxer. And we're going to look at this thing new on demand and on DVD is How to Be Single with Rebel Wilson.
By the way, out of Cannes, that new De Niro boxing film where he's kind of...
And a Casey Affleck film, too.
And a Casey Affleck next week. But I'm just wanted a little bit of news. That I'm hearing great things out of Cannes, which is going on right now while we're recording this, about that new Robert De Niro film where he is kind of the same thing Stallone was in Creed. De Niro is the trainer in this fight film, and hearing great things about
you know,
that.
Before we say goodbye for this episode, there's this movie, I think it's called The Irishman, you aware of this? That's reuniting Scorsese and De Niro for the first time since Casino, which will be very, very interesting. And they're not doing Italian mobs, obviously, they're doing Irish mobs, but I look forward to that. And De Niro also has a film coming out where he plays a stand-up comedian.
He's an
insult guy. He's Rickles. So we'll hopefully De Niro will have some better movies in
there. You heckling me?
All right. So anyway, thanks for sitting around for Bill Bergoli,
yes.
Bill McCuddy?
Yeah, right.
Say goodbye.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was looking at my notes.
And Perry Nemiroff, thanks for sitting in with us, who comes in from L.A.
Hey.
To our podcast and our television show. So thanks a lot.
Not Louisiana, L.A., Los Angeles.
The City of Angels.
Material just keeps getting better and better. But
we warned you.
You would not know that Bill actually does stand-up comedy on the side. And if you enjoy these little riffs that he's doing, please go to Caroline's in New York when you're here, and you'll enjoy it. Anyway, we'll see you. Thanks for sitting around talking movies. We'll sit around talking movies with you next time.